there's a woman that I'll call SL that I've been working with. She first came to see me when she'd been diagnosed with a type 2 diabetes, which is late onset diabetes through obesity. And she weighed almost 200 pounds and only 5 foot tall, had a BMI of 39. So really very heavy for such a small frame. And she was already in trouble, tired, depressed, with high blood pressure, and her long-term health prognosis really wasn't good. So, like many of my clients, SL was an expert dieter, and she'd done all sorts of things in the past. I knew the calorie and carb count for most kinds of foodstuffs. But her thing was binging on sweet stuffs. And when we worked together on with the PS Tech Track and the kind of unfurling what was going on with her, she had a massive amount of anger inside her that was never expressed. It had never been safe for her to express her anger. And she learned that when she was very, very small. So her way of burying her anger was by eating sweets and ice cream and just burying all of that stuff under food. And PS Tech worked brilliant with her, take the emotional heat out of her childhood belief system.
So first you're starting out with the childhood issues of anger with the click tracks?
Yeah.
Childhood memories?
What I do when a client comes in, we talk about their beliefs around food, you know, what's happening around food for them.
Okay.
I find out what they're eating. You know, what time do you get up in the morning? What time do you eat breakfast? If they're up at 6 in the morning, they're not eating till 10 in the morning. What's happening in that gap? You know, why aren't they breaking their fast from overnight? You know, and what are they putting into their body? Nutritionally, I'm interested to know what they're eating.
Okay.
Some therapists just say, well, you can just, once you've had these procedures, you can just eat whatever you want. But actually, I'm interested in my clients eating good nutritious food. So I find out what they're doing nutritionally. I'm finding out what they're, you know, do they sit at a table and eat food in their home? Who is at home with them? Are they on their own? Is it a stressful time at the table, or is it a relaxed time? Is it an honored time? Who cooks? Who eats? What's the atmosphere? And, you know, and ask them as well, how's that been when they were growing up?
Okay, so you're looking at their behavior today and then looking for the similarities in when they grew up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not even similarities, just tracking it back.
Well, yeah.
You know, yeah. So
that's what I meant, tracking back with the similar feelings, similar beliefs.
Similar examples, similar constructs.
Experiences, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to insert in here because you had mentioned before, and you're touching on here, you know, who are you eating with, where, who's feeding, you know, who's preparing. You talked about the feeder.
Yeah. Quite often with obese people, they're not the only ones feeding themselves. They may have someone else in their house, a husband, a wife, who doesn't even have to be very heavy, who are feeding them, who has an investment in this person staying big. And it's a codependency thing.
So it's not so much looking on the outside for blame, per se.
Just looking at the dynamic.
But to be aware of the dynamic, yeah, what's the relationship and...
And what's the payoff? Because even if status quo is uncomfortable, it's what you know, it's what your subconscious knows. And even if you're unhappy with what you have, there are big internal subconscious pressures to maintain the status quo. And we need to look at those fears about breaking out, about making changes, to allow changes in behavior. Because none of this is going to work. It can't all just be theoretical. Eventually, it's going to have to be about what you put in your mouth. And that's about changing behavior. And that's about changing belief.
So you're looking at some of the fears, in this case with SL, the anger and whatnot. You're doing a click track on old memories, right, when she was younger?
Old memories, yeah.
And the beliefs, I know we use PS Tech Positive for changing beliefs and, you know, basically installing new ones. You know, how do you approach that? How do you work with that?
Just PS, if they come from a family, for instance, where all their sisters are big, their mom's big, their dad's big, I could never be slim because everyone I know is big and all that stuff, then that's what you can go in on the PS Tech Track. I can never be slim. I'm always going to be big. This is who I am. Everyone in my family, I've got the same genes. I'm doomed to be big. They'll have a belief about their weight, their size. They'll have a belief about why they are as they are.
So you're using the basic click tracks on the emotional part to that belief?
Yeah. How does that feel?
When the emotion's down, then do you use the positive, or what do you do at that point?
Might be enough at that point just to get it down to zero and then look at what else is around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
I also run a timeline with clients, but it's a timeline that they'll make the points of reference on. For some clients, they want to have on their timeline birth because they'll have heard apocryphally within their family that they were a tiny underweight baby that always needed to be fed. And the whole family focused its attention on feeding this underweight tiny baby. And the obesity started then.
Gotcha.
And there will be other people who said, well, you know, I was fine. I was really fine. I was slim, happy, content with my size, active till I hit 14. I said, okay, what happened around then? Or when I got married, or when I had my second child, and I had that terrible delivery, and I thought to myself, I don't want to get slim again, because if I lose weight again, my husband's going to want another baby, and I can't go through that trauma again.
Okay.
There'll be a reason, and it's different with everyone.
So you're using some NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, some timeline therapy, etc., but when you come to a emotional event or
a
thought or whatever, you're pulling out the click track or having them pull it out, neutralize it, move on to the next issue.
I might not interrupt the process.
Right.
With the timeline, I might get them just to kind of tell me the narrative along the timeline and say, you know, because I don't want to keep interrupting them and say,
looking
at this timeline now, where's the emotional heat? Where do you feel it most?
You follow the thought and the daisy chain along and you make notes and you have a list going almost.
Absolutely. We always start on the biggest. Just go for the biggest.
Okay, good.
Because it will knock out a lot of the smaller ones. And PS Tech will do that beautifully.
Now with SL, you mentioned cravings, I think, too. So she had the anger and the cravings. Are those kind of two different subjects and ways to approach? Or do the cravings go away when she deals with the anger?
No, I think the cravings had a life of their own, really. Had a dominance of their own.
Yeah.
And they'll often be an obsessional food that obese people or heavy people will be focusing on. Something, a reward system for themselves, a way of giving them something for them. So, and it's often something really fattening and sugary and fatty, like an ice or a particular kind of biscuit cookie. Or a chocolate bar that they really like. But I ask them to bring one in, you know, and they can sit with it firstly wrapped and on a plate. With one woman I work with, it was hot buttered toast. So I made her hot buttered toast. And I said, so looking at it now, how high is your desire for this toast if 10 is the most you can desire this toast? And she said, well, it's only about 6. And I said, really? It's your obsessional food and you only want it at 6? And she said, well, if I was on my own eating this, as I always am when I eat this, I'd put on a lot more butter. So I went back and put on a lot more butter. It's got to be as big for them and as real for them. You know, it's got to be as compulsive. They've got to really want it. When the toast came back up, all hot and steamy with loads and loads, lashings, embarrassing amounts of butter on it, then it was a 10.
Okay.
And then we can start our work. Because let's not start our work on something that's a 6, because your subconscious mind will trick you. And she'll say, well, yeah, I'm sorted with toast with just a bit of butter on, but I still would really hanker and obsess about toast with lots of butter on.
So just add more butter.
Add more butter. Go for the real thing. Go for the biggest. And fizzy drinks. Getting people to bring in their fizzy drink of choice in the size that they would always buy it. And don't bring me in a can if when you're at home and when you're drinking it on your own or obsessing about it, you're drinking it out of a 2-liter bottle. Bring me in the 2-liter bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's got to have cold condensation on it and you don't feel the same buzz about it if it's warm, then it's got to be in the freezer for 10 minutes till it's as completely appealing as it can be.
So So get it up to a 9 or 10, you know, at least a 9 or a 10 if you can.
Really want it.
All right. So if in the moment they're like, no, I don't feel like it right now, no matter what, I mean, you can't really...
I have not experienced that.
Can't work. Oh, okay. I haven't experienced it. You've always been able to get it up.
They're bringing you. It's like frankincense and myrrh. They are offering you. They are sharing with you. They're exposing themselves. This is my secret obsessional. If they're bringing me something that's a six, I'm going to say, that's great, but what else is there?
Have you ever had anybody say to you, I don't want you to take the feeling away from this?
Yeah.
Yeah? What do you do in that case if they just go,
We start with that. You're not going to take this away from me. I'm not going to let you take this away from me. You're not going to make me.
Yeah.
No one's going to make me give this up.
Right.
And we can PS tech that down.
PS tech the fear of letting it go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the anger.
Or the
this
whatever.
Is all I have.
The
my life
around
is
it. Okay.
Crap. This is how I get through. You can't take this away from me.
So you might have an emotional issue as well as the craving.
Yeah.
Okay,
you'll
so address the emotion first.
You'll have the emotional driver for the craving.
Yeah.
No one ever needs that much ice cream.
And then what do you do with the craving once it's high?
We PS tech it.
So click track it.
Yeah, click track it.
As they're looking at it or just imagining
it? Just looking at it, holding it in their lap or on a table close by them.
Uh-huh.
And then when that's come down to nothing, then, okay, pick it up, smell it. Where's it gone to now?
Okay.
Ooh, it can go right back up to 10. And ultimately they get to taste it. And that can take it right back as well, but, I mean, it tends not to take it all the way back up to 10. Or if it does, then it collapses really quickly.
So if they taste it and it comes back up, then you run another click track?
Yes.
Okay. So you start out and run a click track on looking at it. And, well, number one, make sure you get the craving up to a 9, or at least a 9 or a 10 better.
Number one, make sure you got the right craving thing.
Right. You have the right craving thing under the right circumstances. Like you said, if it's a fizzy drink with condensation, all the sights and sounds and smells and looks. Everything.
Everything.
You know, you can play with those things to get it as high
as
possible.
As perfect as it can be.
It's perfect. Yeah, perfect craving, call it.
The perfect craving.
And then just looking at it, run the click track with the craving till it's down.
Get it down to get that really down.
Then pick it up. Pick it up, okay.
Yeah, it might be something you need to unwrap. If it's a chocolate
bar
or a packet of biscuits or a jar of peanut butter, you might need to take the jar off and break the seal. And do that.
So the first act before eating it, or the next step from looking at it to possessing it, maybe. And then if it goes up at all, now that may not go up to a 10, right?
No, that's correct. That might not go up to a 10.
Okay, but that's okay, right?
It'll have a little bit of emotional heat in it.
Okay.
Because you've smelt it now, so you're involving another set of...
And you run the click track on that.
...senses and get that back down.
Okay. When you have that down, then take the next step, which might be smelling or eating or whatever.
Yeah, tasting. And then they go, oh, what have you done to it? How have you managed to make it taste so bad?
Now, is the craving something after you've done that process? Oh, now, once you're done with that and it's down to a zero, is there another step here? Or?
No, but we've kind of skipped over the initial step, which was this global click where we might just do, I don't want to give this up.
Oh, okay. I thought we did address that actually. The emotion, we're
clear that they will have complied. I've asked them to bring in their favorite craving thing.
Right.
They're good clients. They will do this. They'll have gone out and shopped for it. They'll have bought it. They'll be quite excited about showing me what it is. So they'll have complied, and then I'll say, so how do you feel about giving this up? And then all the other sadness and anger and frustration that they can't have it will come up, and we can address that globally with the click track first.
So at this point you're not really dealing with specific memories of that are feeding this per se, but just the imagination. Well, you have it actually physically there, let's call it, but anyway, you're looking with the visual of the craved food and the emotions that are there about giving it up. And then when you deal with that down to zero, do you say 0-1, or do you sometimes it's a 1, is that okay, or?
Yeah, sometimes it's a 1.
Yeah.
0 to a 1, that's okay. Yeah.
And then you move on to the, you take the steps toward possessing or
bringing
viewing,
it closer,
possessing,
planning it,
consuming, etc.
Opening.
Okay. But after you're done with all that, is there any more steps on that with the craving?
It's gone. It's pretty much gone.
Do you
and you can have a client turn up with a carrier bag full of the foods that they obsess about.
More than one.
Foods
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And you just choose the one that they crave the most.
Okay. Do you ever have to go after the each one individually?
Never individually, but sometimes two or three.
Okay.
Depends how strong the attachment is to these craving foods.
Right. If the emotional issues underlying, though, I mean the overall emotional issues of
loss.
Fear of gaining weight, of loss, you know, et cetera, relationships, if those aren't addressed, will the cravings come back?
The food cravings will just be a manifestation of the emotional pain.
Yeah.
So it's good to knock out the food cravings, but the drivers that initiated that relationship with those foods might still be in place.
Okay. So the craving may come back if we don't get to the core issue. No?
Yeah, of course. You have to collapse the core issues.
Yeah, okay. So, but sometimes you do, even, let's say you haven't collapsed the core issues yet because they haven't been found, haven't been revealed. You may do the craving work just to get them going.
Absolutely.
And then it may come back and then you just address it again.
Yeah.
Kind of, as you continue the work to get to the core. But both, ultimately, you have to continue that work to deal with the core issues that make you of the mind model that says, I am an overweight person.
Yeah, or I am out of control about food.
Yeah, okay.
The fact they're an overweight person is the end product, that they are out of control about food.
All right. Which may be a belief, but another belief may be something like, hey, you know, I eat this to feel good because I deserve it.
Yeah, food is reward.
Yeah.
That's a big driver.
Do you have any other specific examples?
So what's interesting being a hypnogastric band practitioner is that when it's a great hook, so a client might come in and say, I want the hypnogastric band, and we begin to talk, and I say, actually, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and you might need to do other work through PS Tech or EFT or hypnotherapy or whatever modalities I have to collapse other issues, and you know the food is something that you could kind of come to later. Whereas other people, because food has been so dominant in their dysfunction, so they've got themselves into such a state around food and their obesity issues, you have to start concentrating on the food to get them into a sense of self-esteem where they can begin then to look at other issues.
We chatted before about JB.
JB won Slimmer of the Year prize when she was 14. For losing weight and put it all back on in a year and more, and that was the last time she could ever remember being slim.
So a lot of times I think a good question to look at is, when is the last time you remember being thin, right?
Yes, but it's often not a safe place to take them back to, or not a place that they recognize as a safe place.
Right.
That's why the goal that has to be into the future. You have to be able to get them to visualize future success, not reclaiming the past.
Right. No, I didn't mean as a reclamation.
Okay.
I meant as one of the core, finding core issues.
For sure. So what happened to you when you were 14? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that'll be it. And if it was, as in her case, an issue of sexual violation when she was 14, getting slim again, even now that she's in her late 50s, held for her a great fear that she would be sexually violated again. It's a fear that she expressed. So
it got paired up. Being thin equals possibly
being a sexual target.
Not safe. Yeah.
Not safe.
I think this safety issue is a big one in a lot of different ways.
In very many different, very very many different ways. It can being safe. Being fat can keep you in a relationship. Being fat can keep you passive. Being fat can keep you content. And there's a fear attached to, if I get slimmer, will I be comfortable? Will I put up with everything I've got in my life? Will I have to change everything? What will I lose? Who will I lose?
You had mentioned somebody that had been out of work for 2.5 years.
Through his weight. He'd made his life incredibly small. And his eating problem started when he was sent to a boarding school at the age of 5. And he'd gone, his mother'd worked really hard to be able to send him to a boarding school, so he didn't feel that he fitted in class-wise or any shape or form. And he was incredibly sad. At 5 years old, he could not understand why he just couldn't live at home with his mother. And his earliest memories were of missing home and this incomprehension that he couldn't be with his mom. And when she came to visit, she would bring big food parcels. And if he cried to say, you know, I'm really unhappy, she'd say, hush, hush, you know, don't worry about it, eat this. Just eat this. And he had made a massive connection between food as a source of comfort for him that had lasted well into his 40s. And his core emotions had always been denied. They were denied by his mother from a very early age.
I think this is important to note, because quite often people are saying, well, just forget the negative. Just ignore it, you know, be positive, that kind of thing. But we can see how these are, I'm going to call them extreme examples, because these are people, some of these...
They're not extreme.
Yeah, what I mean by extreme is you look at them and you go, well, this person's 300 pounds or 400 or whatever. I'm not that bad. And I wanted to make this point because quite often it may be more subtle, the manifestation. In other words, maybe I'm only 20 pounds overweight. Ah, it's no big deal. Not, you know, I can just, you know, I just have to work out more. And sure enough, you work out more and you do lose it, you know.
Yeah.
But you work out more intensely, that may not be the most healthy kind of prescription.
Absolutely. And in my therapeutic practice generally, I've worked much more with body dysmorphia in lots of ways, where I've worked with very slim clients who are massively controlled about what they eat.
Right.
You know, taking veganism to the extreme, or having colonics every couple of days, or barely eating, you know, it's all bulimics and anorexics.
Right.
All of those, anything that isn't about being comfortable around food. So it's not just an indicator that you're overweight that you can be out of kilter about food.
Have you been working with also, like, you know, quite a while for the last few years as well with the other end, you know, the bulimic,
with
the anorexic.
Bulimics, yeah.
Okay, because I know Tim did a lot of that work. Which those are some of the toughest ones, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And very entrenched patterns and very entrenched belief systems.
Yeah.
And they've had huge secondary gains by how they've been operating and running their lives. And it's only when they get older, when the ravages of the physical ravages of the bulimia have really begun to impact on their health, that they're willing to see some alternate ways and seek help, and really are ready to make some changes quite often.
So what we're doing here is we're trying to find the paired up conclusions or beliefs. We're trying to find the emotional drivers. We're trying to find the reasons why we believe. And most of it, is subconscious, why this behavior is occurring. Now, with that said, we're doing it in the interest of feeling it and letting it go, not analyzing it,
not judging it.
Right, not judging,
correct.
Not analyzing, just notice
letting
it, let it go.
Yeah.
Now, because we're hanging on to it subconsciously. Now,
absolutely.
My question for this is, sometimes we're looking at this, and some people may be saying, wow, that sounds complicated. How do I find all this? Or how do I get to this, you know? Do you have an answer for that?
Is there a therapist? Or is there just an ordinary, or is there just a client?
As a client, let's say. I'm going to address most of the people. There are some therapists listening, but I also wanted to address first the people that have these issues. You got any nice tips for,
I really like the hook of familiar.
Okay.
Sit with a feeling. Sit with how you're feeling about yourself and think to yourself, is this a familiar feeling? And begin to track it back. When have I had this feeling before? When have I felt this, I don't know, trapped, demoralized, stuck, overwhelmed? When have I felt this feeling before? And begin to have a sense that with familiar feelings, they're familiar because you've had them before. And the farther back you can track it, you'll be finding the initiating trigger events.
So they're looking for a memory or an event, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Memory or event, or, yeah.
And then, so when you say track back, you may go, okay, I remember one, yesterday. and then last week, and then a year ago, and then, okay, that might, so you just keep asking the question till you don't have an answer.
That's right.
Okay. So you might have a list of anywhere from 1 to 10 or 20, maybe, who knows.
For sure, and then you can look at your list and say, well, which one feels the most emotional heat? I mean, some people don't have very kind of, they don't feel very in touch with something that happened when they were 5.
Right, right.
Perhaps. So, you know, but it might have been the initiating trigger or one of the triggers. And then they've replicated that pattern or repeated that pattern subsequently. And they can choose an event where it has a more powerful resonance for them. Go where the heat is.
Okay.
Go for what's real and go for where the heat is. That's why sometimes you do need the help of a practitioner, because it can be daunting.
Yeah, true.
To open those cans of worms and to lift that lid.
Sometimes, have you worked with somebody just once or twice and they get going on their own?
Get going on their own with a PS Tech?
Yeah, they get beyond that daunting feeling and they're able to continue on their own. Does that happen?
It does happen.
Okay.
It does happen, yeah.
And other times somebody really needs your help every week for maybe a while. True.
Sometimes people won't do it on their own.
Yeah.
We're all a bit like that. Well, we can be a bit like that. I think if it started with a bedrock of 2 or 3 sessions, and then they can go on their own.
Okay.
Because then they will have seen some changes, and changes will have occurred, and they still remain safe.
Ah, okay. I think that's
then
really,
then they can absolutely go and continue on their own. That's really, that happens all the time. This is not a long, drawn-out process. It's an amazingly quick process. It's an amazingly safe process. But they need to build up faith in the modality and faith in themselves that they can handle what they bring up.
You also may look at the fear of making changes. That's another category, if you will.
Mm.
Use the click tracks and the EEFs on that. If you have the accelerator, you can pepper that in as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does the PS Tech positive come in? The use
to
of that.
Embed positive change.
Do you use kind of standard positive statements, or do you really help them customize that statement?
Help them customize with their own words.
Okay, good.
I think I come from a background of EFT, though. When you're using your own setups and you're using your own words, then they really, really resonate for you.
But if they are using their own words, you want to make sure there's some basic points to cover,
oh, for sure.
Such as make sure it's positive.
And it's not in the negative, not written with
right.
Yeah,
in
but
the present,
that can be
future,
done in an email to them, or that can be done with some guidance over the telephone to them, just saying, okay, you're on track with this phrase, or how about changing the wording in this phrase just a little bit.
The other question, the last one I wanted to ask you here mainly on this kind of with the positives is, do you use dates at all? You know, I'm at this ideal weight on or before this date.
Or on this Christmas or at this Easter holiday or at this, yes. But not like specific calendar dates, but mainly, you know, holiday dates.
Okay,
Easter, summer holidays or, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas. So they're kind of key targets.
Okay.
But definitely, always.
Now, when the holiday comes and they're not quite there or they're not where they thought they might be or wanted to be, how do you work with that? What do you do there?
I think the targets are all set to be manageable, and they're set when the person is already on the path. I don't burden with targets when they haven't changed their belief system. You know, they begin to lose weight. That's great. So weight loss is sustained and it's regular weight loss.
Okay.
That's how we begin. And when they begin to trust that the changes they put in place, and they get on the scales every week, and my goodness, there's another couple of pounds off, and they're amazed, and they're beginning to trust the process, then we can project forward.
Okay, so on the PS Tech positive for statements, okay, somebody's not they're not safe with the process yet. Can you give me an example of a positive statement real quick? Someone can use here, but just to give a flavor of the type of statement you're using in the beginning.
Because I also tell them not to get bound up with the scales, because in the weeks when they're not dropping pounds, they're losing inches.
Right.
So I'm healthier and slimmer, eating healthy every day, you know, that kind
of... Okay, so kind of generic around the eating issue. And the health and the feeling. And
because
then,
it's true with weight loss. I mean, you might have 3 or 4 weeks of regular weight loss, then there'd be a a week when you don't lose any pounds, but you'll just be losing inches.
In the beginning parts, you're doing a positive statement that's a little more generic around, call it the opposite of the problem areas being the eating or...
Effortlessly on track, enjoying what I'm eating.
So you're starting to... Yeah. Then as they're getting more on track, then you can begin to do positives surrounding an ideal weight by a certain time or something.
An ideal natural weight.
Yeah.
Around a certain date.
All right. But you don't really go with pounds as much, right? Sounds like.
Well, for women in particular, it's dress sizes. And for men, it's quite often, you know, like jeans. They want to be back to the 30 waist or the 32 waist, even though they're in a 48 waist. They'd visualize it on pieces of clothing.
So I'm being ridiculous here, but I don't care if I'm 500 pounds as long as my waist is 32.
Yeah,
in a way.
In a way. But it all comes into... It all
absolutely. It's hard to have 32 waist if you're 500 pounds.
Right,
but again, the weight not being the importance here, but the
feeling about themselves.
The look, if you will. Yeah, the experience.
The experience. I mean, I have one guy and his whole kind of positive... PS Tech mantra thing is I'm wearing Timberland boots, chinos, and a polo shirt, and I look fabulous.
Okay.
And he knows how he wants to look, and that's what he's conjuring. He doesn't have a size because he's always been. He said size doesn't really mean anything to him. I've always been so big, so he can't imagine a size, but he can imagine a look. Yeah.
And that's easier to get into after a few whatever session times, etc. As they begin making the progress, they can see
or
feel the change, the shift. Something's working here, okay, and it's okay. I'm okay.
I can get excited, and I can trust the process.
Yeah.
And they can have PS Tech at home to support their journey.
Do you have anything else to add here that...
It's an organic process. It's not. I don't have to come up with a solution to how am I going to cure this person or how am I going to make this person change. We're in it together, and there are tools that we can use.
And when you first started out, it wasn't quite so comfortable, maybe, right? Your very first one, you were like, okay, what do I do?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but as you move along, you just know what to do.
Well, there's a commonality of human expression and human experience, but there's a massive amount of individuality in there. Everyone is so different.
And what would
spark one person to massively gain weight, the same trigger event wouldn't trigger another person. We all respond so individually.
Yes. Yeah, very good, very good. And I think the familiar feeling, following the feelings... Allowing them to come through, that's going to give that customization that's necessary. The focus on the issue. And then, of course, the click tracks and everything allow you to, that's the targeting. That once you turn it on and you target properly with the, you know, really in tune with the emotions and the memories, you're going to get
And use the click tracks on all the fears.
And the fear of making the changes as well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I kind of summarized a lot of things there too. There's a lot in this. We went a little longer than I thought. I thought it would be a long time though, because there are a lot of aspects, and I wanted to kind of go at things at different angles here, because there are going to be different angles for everybody. And I think it might behoove people, you listen to it once, you might want to listen to it again. As Tim likes to say, listen to it again, and this time take notes. See what really hits you. If you're using it on your own, if you're a practitioner, you got a lot of nice hints here as well. I think PS Tech is a really simple way to be a practitioner in a lot of ways, but I think EFT, like you brought up, it can be a nice rapport builder and a way to connect with people, because you're walking this path with them, this path of finding their true self, their ideal self that's in there,
and you're bearing witness.
Absolutely.
Which is really important for people.
Not just the icky stuff that you want to use the click track on, but a witness to the truth that's already there that you're allowing to release. And as they release it, you can watch and remind them that it's there and it's coming up and it's coming through.
Once again, what's
your contact information for everybody if they want to contact you?
Okay, my email address is Sally, which is S-A-L-L-Y, workingonthebody.com. That's all lowercase, all joined up.
Okay.
Sally at workingonthebody.com. I also have my hypnogastric band site, which is called www.hypnogastricbandlondon.co.uk.
Okay, and then you have workingonthebody.com, yeah, that one
yeah.
too. Good.
Yeah,
do you have any final comments here?
Well, talking to you this evening, it's incredibly complex.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But not complicated, I don't think.
But not complicated.
Yeah.
And a step at a time.
A step at a time.
And your client will lead you as well.
And if you do clear these things up one at a time and you go after them, it will go down. The list will get smaller.
Definitely. And these are life-changing and life-saving modalities that you can really, really change people's lives.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of goodies in here. I appreciate everything that you laid out for us. And while, again, one size doesn't fit all, it's really hard to go, okay, you know, step one, two, three on everything. But there are some sub-steps in here, I think, that we gave people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good examples and experiences as well. But, again, if they have any questions or comments, feel free to email you, right? Is that okay?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Okay.
No problem.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, Sally, I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything you've given us here and all of your dedication the last several years, and I'm sure many years to come. Are you enjoying your work, by the way, working with people like this?
Definitely. The work I was born to do, definitely.
Well, I appreciate that work that you're doing for everybody. This is not just from a weight standpoint, but like you said, life-changing, life-saving, and about that experience of the ideal self, which then as you allow that self, that ideal self to come through that some of us are afraid of because it might mean I have to step out and be something more than I am or I have been acting as, that can be scary. But in reality,
all that potential.
Yeah, when we let go of the fears of that non-safe world, actually it's not that bad, huh?
It's not that bad. For sure, it's not that bad.
I appreciate the work that you're doing, no matter what the approach here. So
thanks
for coming on with me and for staying up late on a Sunday night. I appreciate that especially.
No worries.
We have a little hourly difference here.
We do.
And again, thanks so much for everything. Everybody throw a comment at the end of this page here that you find this recording on, and also if you'd like, shoot Sally a little thank you, if anything, on her email. And you can contact her at those areas. And her contact info is also on the page where you see this audio as well. So, again, thanks a lot, Sally. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Everybody, good luck. Have a great year this year.